Now, Mr. Dana Andrews on the Bromo Seltzer Hollywood Star Playhouse. Bromo Seltzer presents Hollywood Star Playhouse, tales of suspense, thrills, adventure by Hollywood's finest writers with Hollywood's top stars. Portions of this program are transcribed, and it's brought to you by Bromo Seltzer, the fast, effective headache help, which reminds you to...
fight! Headache! Three ways! Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Herbert Rawlinson. Welcome to the Bromo Seltzer Hollywood Star Playhouse. Murder will out. It was Chaucer who first said that 600 years ago. But it was true then, and it is still true, that sometimes murder will out too late. Consider this stark reality as Mr. Dana Andrews creates for you now the extraordinary role of Professor Everett Grover in the story called On a Windy Night.
As a psychologist, I should have been acutely aware of the danger to myself. And perhaps I was, but even more acute was my awareness of the danger to others. To women who might be coming home by themselves late on a windy night. And so, 3 weeks after the so-called churchyard murder case had first shocked the community, I took the fateful step. I contacted the police.
About your letter to the chief, Professor, it said you had information about the case.
Well, not exactly information, Lieutenant. I've drawn up an analysis.
Beg pardon?
Analysis. A summation and interpretation of the psychological factors involved.
Yeah, 14 pages, single-spaced. Well, Professor, thank you very much.
Aren't you going to read it?
Well, as soon as I get a spare moment. We've fallen so far behind here in homicide. But now that we're not working night and day anymore in this churchyard case, I ought to be caught up in about another week.
Lieutenant, you've got to keep right on working night and day on the churchyard case.
Sure, sure. We're following up every lead.
My analysis clearly establishes the danger.
What danger?
Of the killer striking again.
So that's what you've got in these 14 pages, single-spaced.
This is a repetitive crime committed by a killer who will inevitably strike again unless he's caught.
That's the way you analyze it, huh?
That's the way it is. The fact that the victim was neither robbed nor molested. The fact that her wrists were cut after she was already dead. The fact that... oh, there are a dozen other manifestations of the crime that prove that it was committed by a psychopath who will repeat and repeat unless he's caught. Now, will you read my analysis without delay?
I'm taking it right into the chief. You go on back to your campus, probably get in touch with you. Hawley.
Morning, Lieutenant.
What's the idea of Hawley barging into my office?
Now, don't give yourself another nervous break.
Well, it's news hounds like you
just
that...
I thought you might have a little squib for me on what Professor Everett Grover's doing here at Homicide. Oh, Professor, I'm Ross Hawley with the Morning Sentinel.
I know. You're an exceptionally literate reporter, Mr. Hawley.
You hear that, Lieutenant? The professor thinks I'm literate.
One of these days, I'm going to tell you what I think. Now, beat it. There's no story here, and I've got to go in and see the chief.
All right, I'll be good. But remember, if a story should develop out of the professor's
visit... Yeah. But lay off the professor, you hear?
Next day, I still hadn't heard from the police, so I called the lieutenant. He was tied up, they said, and would call me back. But he didn't. Well, anyway, I'd done my duty in apprising them of the psychological aspects of the case. The rest was up to them. It was a week before I had to make my next fateful decision.
Evening, Professor.
Mr. Hawley.
The literate reporter. Well, you mind if I come in?
Oh, forgive me. What brings you out this way, Mr. Hawley?
You.
Me? Just put those examination papers on the floor. Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks. Your analysis of the churchyard murder case wouldn't be in this stuff, would it?
Who told you about that?
My first job on the paper was reading proof. Got so I could scan copy upside down. course, the first time I ever got to put the trick to practical use was the day I dropped in on you and the lieutenant.
Well, you can be sure my analysis isn't among these papers.
But you got a copy of it around.
What do you want it for?
Front page, of course.
Well, I couldn't permit that.
Why not?
Well, that, it would shock the public.
Is that bad?
Well, it's hardly the sort of...
How do you think you'll ever get the police to do anything about your analysis unless you shock the public? And didn't you call the churchyard murder a repetitive crime?
I suppose you read that upside down, too.
Mm-hmm. But you're the one who's doing his thinking upside down, Professor. If you're really so sure of your conclusions...
Of course I am.
Then it's your responsibility to do everything you can to prevent murder number two. And number three.
Who are you to speak of responsibility? All you care about is getting a sensational story.
Suit yourself. How are you going to feel, Professor, when you read the sensational story of murder number two?
Wait.
Yeah?
You know, you're quite a psychologist yourself, Mr. Hawley. Get out your pencil and plenty of paper. It would be an understatement to say that the story which Rose Hawley had on page one next morning was only a sensation. Even inside my classroom, it proved impossible to maintain a discussion on any other topic. And the second period had hardly begun when I received a summons to the office of Miss Wilton, the dean.
Oh, here he is now. Come in, Professor.
Well, Dean, I hope I haven't...
I assume you've already met our chief of police, Mr. Marsh.
Oh. Well, not because I didn't try.
Now, you listen to me, Grover.
Please, won't you both be seated?
Thank you.
Professor, Mr. Marsh seems to think that this morning's newspaper story was unfortunate.
Unfortunate? Why, the women in this town are scared half to death. They're driving us crazy down at headquarters, demanding that we rush right out and capture this repetitive killer.
Believe me, Chief, I can appreciate your situation. But...
Can you? Yet you couldn't resist playing into Ross Hawley's hands, couldn't resist getting your name in the headlines.
I felt it my duty to let the facts be known, after you had seen fit to ignore...
Facts? What facts? Now, you look here, Professor. How many murderers have you ever known, talked to, trapped?
Why...
Professor Grover is the author of The Psychopathological Killer, considered one of the most definitive works on the subject.
That's not what I asked. I want to know how many murderers has...
Well, personally, I've known but a few, and trapped none.
Yeah. Chief Marsh,
But vicariously, I've known hundreds, thousands. Known them so intimately that I can instantly recognize a pattern of psychopathological behavior.
Psychopathological... Me, I started in homicide 27 years ago, and in that time, I've run up against hundreds of murders and solved more than my share of the cases, lots more.
And in the light of your experience, Chief...
That analysis of the churchyard murder case is a lot of poppycock. Now, what you're going to do, Professor, is issue a retraction.
Retraction?
Yes, saying that Hawley twisted everything you said, misquoted you.
But he didn't. It wouldn't be fair to him.
Well, he didn't worry about you, did he? Quit worrying about him. The important thing is get the women folks calmed down. Now, are you going to issue that retraction?
And if I don't?
I'm going straight to the Board of Regents of this university. Well, Professor?
I'll think about it.
Not for long, you won't. You'll have it in tomorrow morning's papers. Or else.
Professor?
Yes, Dean?
Could you have been wrong?
No. No, I don't think I couldn't have been wrong.
Then what is there to think about?
There was a departmental faculty meeting that evening in the office of Dean Wilton. I sat through it hardly listening, or rather, listening only to what was going on outside. There was a wind tonight, a high wind, the first time since the night of the murder. If only the police would be on the alert tonight. Maybe if I called Chief Marsh... But no, that would only antagonize him further. All he wanted from me was a retraction.
Professor.
Hmm? Oh. Where is everybody?
Gone. Minutes ago.
Well, I'm... You must think I'm out of my mind, Dean Wilton.
No, what I do think is you're overly concerned about what the attitude of the Board of Regents will be.
Matter of fact, I haven't thought much about that.
Good, because even though a few of our co-eds have dropped out of school and left town...
What?
Oh, I thought you knew. It was in the evening papers.
I didn't read the evening papers purposely.
Well, then I'm sorry. Everett.
What?
You don't mind. I'm calling you Professor is so...
No, of course. No, I don't mind at all. Ruth?
You asked me once to go to the theater with you, Everett, but it was just after my accident and, well, anyway, I'd say yes now.
All right. Tonight?
But it's only a little after 9, and it would do you good to get your mind on other things.
Yes. But I couldn't get my mind off. Promise you'll let me take you some other time, Ruth.
Well, of course.
Oh. Good night, then.
Everett.
Yes?
Why not let me drive you home? It's practically on my way, and there's such a wind
well,
out.
It's because of the wind that I've got to walk. Don't you understand, Ruth? Because of that wind. I don't know how long I walked or where. Up one deserted street, down another, with the wind whipping me on and on. Several times I saw women walking alone, and always I followed them from a distance. But once I must have come too close. Or maybe she looked around because she had read the stories in the papers and she was scared. Anyway, she began to walk faster and faster, and then she was running, running and screaming. I ran too, in the opposite direction, ran until I couldn't run anymore. And then I was walking again. And then I found myself in my own bed, in my own apartment, and someone was frantically ringing my doorbell. All right, all right. I'm coming. Chief Marsh.
Yeah, tell me, Professor, where were you on the night of the first murder?
You mean to say you woke me up at daybreak?
Where were you?
Right here, my apartment.
Alone?
Of course. You said first murder.
Yeah. You were so right, Professor, about it being a repetitive crime.
Last night.
Practically a carbon copy. So if you'll get dressed, I'll take you down to headquarters to dictate your statement.
Statement?
When a man can be such a prophet, he automatically becomes the number one suspect.
Oh, Chief, that's absurd.
What's the matter, Professor? Don't tell me you didn't fix an alibi for the second murder either.
Bromo Seltzer, the fastest effervescent in the headache field, is bringing you Hollywood Star Playhouse. Tonight, starring Mr. Dana Andrews in On a Windy Night.
Fight headache three ways. Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? How do you do? This is your old friend Norman Brokenshire. You know, this time of the year is just swell to get outdoors and into the country. But how often a headache can crop up and spoil your enjoyment of the day. But it needn't, neighbors, not if you keep Bromo Seltzer handy, because Bromo Seltzer fights a headache fast and effectively all three ways. Now, let me explain Bromo Seltzer's three-way help. Most headaches are caused by an upset stomach, excess stomach acidity, and when this happens, your nerves become jumpy too. Well, Bromo Seltzer gives you speedy relief from the pain of that headache. Bromo Seltzer soothes your upset stomach by neutralizing the excess stomach acidity, and it calms those jittery, jangled nerves. As for speed, just compare the speed of Bromo Seltzer's effervescence with that of any tablet product you've ever tried. Yes, compare it. You'll be amazed. For best results, use cold water, follow the label, avoid excessive use. Don't let a headache spoil your fun outdoors or indoors. Get fast, effective, three-way help for that headache by taking...
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
Now, Act Two of On a Windy Night, starring Mr. Dana Andrews.
I had been right in pronouncing the so-called churchyard murder case a repetitive crime. Yes, I'd been right, to my utter folly. For as soon as my prediction came true, and the murder repeated itself in all its peculiarities, it was I, Everett Grover, A.B.A.M., Ph.D., Professor of Clinical Psychology, who fell under suspicion. Within a few hours of the time the chief of police, Lawrence Marsh, had awakened me with the news of the second murder, I was being herded onto the stage of the show-up room.
All right, hold it right where you are. Don't move, any of you.
Now then, you people out here in the audience, take a good look at these 12 men up on the stage. You think you recognize any of them in connection with any crime?
Yes, the man on this end.
Now, what about the man on this end?
Last night, he's the one. I seen his face as he passed a lamppost. He's the one who ran after me.
But I didn't run after her. I ran in the opposite direction. If you'll only listen to me, I can...
Quiet, everyone. All right, take him out, Lieutenant. All but the professor. The professor is going to explain.
Well, I want a lawyer.
Looks to me, Professor, like you're going to need the whole Bar Association.
The only reason for your accusation is that this woman saw me following her.
This woman, Professor, will testify that you ran after her around 11 o'clock. This was within a half a mile and half an hour of the killing. How do you think that'll sound to a jury?
But that's only circumstantial evidence.
Murderers don't arrange very often for eyewitnesses, Professor. That's why most convictions are on the basis of circumstantial evidence. So now that we've placed you near the scene of the killing, near the time of the killing...
Now, just a minute. You say this murder happened exactly like the other one.
Just as you predicted.
But if it was exactly like the other one, then the body was moved from the death scene to a distant churchyard.
It was.
Well, I don't happen to have a car. So how could I have moved the body?
You stole a car, and what's more, this time we found it.
You found... And I suppose you expect to find my fingerprints.
There weren't any fingerprints, of course. Just a tiny blood stain and a single solitary hair from the victim's head.
If only I'd gone to the theater last night. If only I'd listened to Ruth.
All right. Everett Grover, I arrest you.
Wait.
Well?
If I were the murderer, why would I have drawn attention to myself by writing to you? By bringing in that analysis?
There's a certain type of killer who likes to flirt with discovery. I read it in a book. Your book, The Psychopathological Killer.
Oh.
As I start to say, I'm arresting you, Everett Grover, on a double charge of murder.
They mugged me, fingerprinted me, locked me up, sent in my lawyer, and then left me to wait and think. And read the papers. And the way they added things up, the finger of guilt pointed unerringly at the pathological professor. Huh. It was only Ross Hawley and the Morning Sentinel who remained objective, dispassionate. From time to time, he even browbeat the chief into getting in to see me.
You hear that, Professor? This wing of the jail is so old and rickety, you can hear it almost as loud as if you were...
You mean the wind?
What else could I mean? And get this, Professor. I've just come from the Weather Bureau. They expect the wind to keep building all through the night.
They do?
Yes. Which means the murderer will strike again. And then what'll happen to the case of the state versus Everett Grover? Here you are, locked in a jail
There's
cell.
There's something you haven't thought of, Hawley.
Oh?
What if the murderer doesn't strike tonight?
But your analysis...
He would always strike during unusual weather conditions, most probably on a night of high winds. But it doesn't follow that he'll kill on every night of high winds. A year might even go by. 2 years.
I see.
But what about the public and the jury? Will they see before it's too late for me?
Look, Professor, I've been reading up on this lately, and the way I get it, a person can be normal, perfectly normal, all his life. And then a little thing like a bump on the head or a nervous breakdown.
The trouble is, Hawley, any number of people have had bumps on the head, nervous breakdowns. And besides, there's so many other possible causes that
it's... Yeah. Well, keep your chin up, Professor. He might strike tonight. He might.
But he didn't. And from the way the papers played up the fact next day, I knew I was as good as convicted now. As good as executed. Unless, heaven help us, it happened. The one horrible thing that could save me. Another such murder. The night before my trial was to open, the wind woke me up. Or was it only the wind? I thought I heard shouting. And then I opened my eyes and saw that the sky was aglow. A fire. The jail was on fire. On a night of high winds.
Professor, come on, I've got the keys.
Hawley, Ross Hawley.
Follow me, Professor, follow me.
And so I followed him. A dozen times we seemed trapped, cut off by the flames. But somehow he brought me through.
You feeling all right, Professor?
Huh? Oh, yeah, I'm all right, Hawley.
Well, where's the chief?
I brought you out on the far side. Don't you get it?
Get what?
Nobody knows I was able to let you out.
Holy.
Yeah. I'll tell them I wasn't able to get through to you.
But when the fire dies down and they aren't able to find my body,
They'll say you got out somehow by yourself. Here, put on my overcoat. You'll find a roll of bills in the left pocket.
Well, listen, man.
Shut up and scram before somebody sees you. And don't stop until you're 1,000 miles away.
But I don't understand why...
I helped get you into this jam, didn't I? Well, the least I can do... Professor, will you get out of here?
Maybe I could make it. Yes, maybe I could get away, far, far away, where they wouldn't find me. And then maybe someday the real killer would be caught, and I'd be able to come back again. And by that time, they might even think that I'd been burned to death in the fire. But what about her? I didn't want her to think that. Well, I'd write to her and... No, that would be too risky. They knew how she'd stuck by me, how she'd raised all that money for my legal defense. Yes, they'd be watching her mail, expecting me to write to her. The thing to do was to stop and tell her now. It would only take a few minutes.
No, Everett, no, you can't run away. They'll surely think you're guilty.
I know, Ruth, but it's my last, my only chance.
Yes, your last, your only chance to catch the killer, if you do what I say. Can't you see, Everett? It's a windy night. That might explain the fire. That might explain everything.
How could I argue when I couldn't even think anymore? I did what she said, exactly what she said. I took the gun she gave me, and I let her walk ahead of me, far ahead of me, up one windy street and down another. There was no one about now, no one. We were all asleep, except for those who were at the fire. The sky on the other side of town turned from red to pink, and still we walked, up one street and down another. And the cadence of my footsteps seemed to say, how do you really know you're not looking for yourself? How do you really know you didn't do it? How do you really know you won't do it again? Tonight. Now. Up ahead now, there were two silhouettes struggling. I ran, but could I run fast enough? I dropped so far behind. Ruth, are you all right?
Look, Everett, look. Don't you see who?
Hawley. Ross Hawley.
So you caught on to me, Professor.
All the time, it was you. Hawley, you even set fire to the jail, didn't you?
When? I knew I'd have to kill her again tonight. So I had to get you out. They'd know it wasn't you. Find out it was me. My bump on the head. My bump.
Hawley, try to tell me. Who was it you were going to kill again tonight?
Her. Walking out. Us kids. Her.
Your mother. Is she the one, Hawley? Is she the one you had to kill again and again?
Yeah. Leaving us kids.
Everett.
No. But he will die. In the chair. Die because a bump on the head made him think he was getting even with his mother for something that happened long, long ago on a windy night.
Dana, a great story with a great twist. And believe me, a great performance. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Herb. You know, it's a great twist for me to be playing something besides a tough guy. I liked it. And I liked very much working with Rosemary DeCamp, with Bob Griffin, Whit Connor, and Harry Bartell. Thanks, folks.
Thanks again, Dana. In just a moment, I'm going to introduce Mr. Robert Young, the star of next week's play. And now, here is Norman Brokenshire.
Thank you, Herb. You know, neighbors, every now and then you come across something so good you just have to tell your friends all about it. Well, now that's the way I feel about Bromo-Seltzer. Here's a product that helps a headache fast. Why, it's the fastest effervescent in the headache field. And Bromo-Seltzer is effective, too. Tackles a headache three ways. You see, neighbors, most times when you're suffering with a headache, you also have an upset stomach due to excess stomach acidity, and your nerves become jittery and jangled, too. Well, now, you can check this for yourself. Take Bromo-Seltzer and watch how fast it helps the pain of that headache. Bromo-Seltzer soothes your upset stomach by neutralizing the excess acid in your stomach, and it calms those jittery, jangled nerves. Yes, sir, Bromo-Seltzer gives you fast, effective headache help all three ways. And you'll like the pleasant taste of Bromo-Seltzer, so sparkling and refreshing. Bromo-Seltzer is on sale at all drugstore counters and fountains. Keep a bottle handy at home and another bottle where you work. Be ready at all times.
Fight headache three ways.
Dana Andrews has appeared through the courtesy of Samuel Goldwyn, for whom he is now starring in I Want You. Tonight's play was written especially for Mr. Andrews by Maurice Zim, with music composed and conducted by Jeff Alexander. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. And now here is the star of next week's thrilling story on Hollywood Star Playhouse, Mr. Robert Young.
It's a horrible thing to face, a blank spot in your memory, a dark void you can't reach into. I know, because I have one. It starts on a certain midnight and lasts until morning. All I know about it is what they've told me, and I keep trying desperately to remember, because the things they've told me add up to hate and terror and murder.
And Blackout is the title of next week's story. Thanks, Bob. On tonight's program, all characters and incidents were fictitious. Any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Portions of this program were transcribed. And now this is Herbert Rawlinson saying goodnight for all of us here on the Hollywood Star Playhouse. And from Bromo Seltzer, the fast, effective headache help in the familiar blue bottle. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.